You keep your mind on the money, keeping your eyes on the wall.
You're my private dancer, dancer for money.
Do what you want me to do. I'm your
private dancer,
dancer for money. And any old music will do.
8:03 on a Tuesday. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Let's not waste any time. Go straight to the phone lines. Joined as we are every week on this fine program, although this one might be spicier than usual. Thomas Drance, Athletic Vancouver, here on the Halford and Bruff Show. What up, Drancer?
Gentlemen, how are you? Mike, glad to see you're feeling better and back in studio. Nice to chat with you both.
It's nice to chat with you as well, Drance.
Drancer, why do you love the Leafs? Why are you cheering for them in the playoffs? Why do you want them to go on a deep run when everyone else in Vancouver wants them to choke in the first round?
Well, so there's a couple things. One is, I don't really have any type of rooting interest, but I recognize that in a world with no gate revenue, having the team that has by far the largest television audience advance the furthest is the best possible thing for this sport at the moment. Like right now, the Leafs going on a deep run would genuinely help the NHL dig out of the escrow hole they're in. It would help the flat cap era end as quickly as possible. It would meaningfully give the league like an existential boost.
Yeah, but I hate them. That is my retort.
Yeah, no, I get it. And look, I mean, there's a lot of people who feel the same about Team USA at international tournaments, right? Like, I never want to see Team USA not make the gold medal game. Like, I never want to see them win gold, especially when Canada's involved, don't get me wrong. But I always want them to make the gold medal game because it's the best possible thing for the sport that I like and for the people who I know that work within it, right? So, I mean, that's sort of just how I view things a little bit more macro, right? And I think if the best possible thing for the NHL is for the Leafs to make the Final Four. Now, additionally, I would add that I do think that the Leafs have managed things in a really interesting way. I think they've, you know, promoted interesting people. I think they've built a different type of organization in how they've approached things. And I do like to see that type of thing rewarded. But, you know, I'm an objective journalist. I'll cover teams based on their quality. I just happen to think the Leafs are the best team in Canada as well. But, yeah, I mean, I root for the sport. And for that reason, I also do think that there's a genuine interest. Like, there's a genuine aligned interest among all people who work in hockey right now that if the Leafs make the conference final, that would be a genuinely good thing for the NHL.
Is it enough to, I mean, I'm just thinking of from a Canucks perspective, is it enough to raise the salary cap?
No, not on its own. I mean, the escrow debt looks like it's going to last at least two more seasons beyond this, but it'll help. Every bit helps. You know, I think that's why the Canucks are playing 56 games, right? Like every bit matters right now as the league looks to dig itself out of, you know, what's been a really costly year for owners and for players, and especially for players, right, who have effectively accrued this massive escrow debt, and that's what's going to keep the flat cap for keep the cap flat for a while. Any revenue you bring in over that sort of may diminish the length of time that the cap stays flat. But yeah, I mean, we're talking about like real growth that's going to have to get, like, you're going to have a $5 billion revenue season to undo the flat cap. A Leafs deep playoff run isn't going to help on its own, but it will help a bit.
It could be a very interesting offseason for them as well. I mean, regardless of what they do in the playoffs, they have so many pending unrestricted free agents. And I'm wondering if, to get away from just making this about the Leafs, mm-hmm. I'm wondering if this is going to be the way things are. Like, the offseason is going to be like this race to acquire bottom six players, but cheaply.
Yes. I mean, for sure. And the, you know, the Leafs offseason anyway, I think centers around Zach Hyman. Like, if the Leafs were the Canucks, the conversations we'd be having about Zach Hyman in this market would be tremendous. But yeah, I think you're right. You know, I once had a really bright front office person pitched to me that he thought eventually NHL teams would get to like a bid system where it's like, instead of approaching a specific player and being like, hey, like, we like you, like, da da da, you just like send out to agents like, hey, we have a slot.
Yeah.
Third line winger needs to be able to kill penalties. $1.2 million on a one-year deal, right? Like, who wants to try out? You know, and not that they try out, but you'd at least like indicate your interest. Like that, sure. That would be like a job you'd be willing, or you'd be like, well, I've never killed penalties before, but I really think I can do it. I'm willing to do it for $900K. You know, like that. I had that suggested to me that might be the evolution of sort of NHL roster building. And you can see how that would happen, especially in the flat cap era. But I love that idea. I mean, I think it's clear that teams do that informally anyway, mm-hmm. but like the informalization of a bid process for players and UFAs, you know, that's something that brighter people than I have legitimately kicked around as something that we could see in the NHL. And perhaps accelerated in the NHL because of the flat cap era.
It's very soccerific. That's exactly what a lot of like European football teams, I know the Whitecaps do it as well, is you don't necessarily target mm-hmm. a player, you target a type of player. And then you go around to a network of agents, and there's a mm-hmm. lot of different companies that exist solely for the purpose of identifying players and then categorizing them.
Why, and, I right. think I am that type of player.
Right, and then you fit in that way. Like, it's not like we're going to go after this guy. It's we're going to go after this type of player. What kind of player is going to fit for the amount of money that we have allocated?
Mm-hmm. It makes sense. I mean, I think that's a thing that hockey teams that are really successful too do in every aspect of what, you know, every aspect of their functioning is geared toward that sort of style or a specific style or a particular identity. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at like the Carolina Hurricanes or the Tampa Bay Lightning in the draft, for example, like I think you can see some pretty consistent themes in terms of, you know, what the Carolina Hurricanes prize is, like defensemen with speed in the first three rounds. And then they take flyers on forwards that score throughout. Right. That's the best drafting team in hockey straight up. And, you know, they allows them to run $10 million below the cap and still be an elite team, right? Mm-hmm. The Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, similarly, right? The Tampa Bay Lightning, their approach is more about burning first round picks for no reason, but
yeah.
nonetheless, yeah. when you look at, yeah, I think it's a sacrificial act to make sure that they find star top six quality centers in the third round,
right? Yeah, it's for the hockey gods.
But yeah, but when you, I mean, if you go look at that, like. If you go look at Cirelli and Mitch Stevens, right? Mm-hmm. Mitchell Stevens didn't quite hit, Cirelli did. But there's a lot of similar attributes based on their sort of junior track record, right? It was like guys who scored but weren't superstar scorers as a junior, speed, grit, played on successful teams. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's the Lightning model. And, you know, whether they hit or miss, whether it's Mitchell Stevens or Anthony Cirelli, like they're targeting those guys and they're doing really well. Clearly, having targeted those guys for years and years and been consistent about it. And, you know, that pays off. So, you know, I think more than anything, it's identifying the way you want to play, identifying that identity, and then going about sort of building a roster that way. And in the Leafs' case, right, I think they changed the way they wanted to play, right? They had these depth pieces that were fast, and they wanted to really play, like, truck meet hockey. Yep. And I think they decided to sort of change things up, to be a little bit more traditional, to be a little bit more durable. And so out went Kapanen and Johnsson. In came TJ Brody and a bunch of slower vets, right? Spezza, Thornton, Simmons. And look at what they did at this deadline. And, like, this is now the team. They paid a third-round pick for David Rittich and a fifth-round pick for Ben Hutton. And those trades will have worked from a Toronto perspective if those two players never play a minute in the playoffs, mm-hmm. right? Like, those are pure insurance policy deals.
Yep.
That's like trying your best to luck-proof your team, right? Like, yeah. We don't even want to deal with injury luck. No yeah. matter what, we're going to have an NHL-caliber player.
That's Gilman going to Dubas. Like, in my experience, sometimes if you go on a long playoff run, you can run into defensive injuries.
You end up calling Nolan Baumgartner, who's on vacation, and say, do you want to play in the Stanley Cup final?
Well, I mean, look, that's probably part of it. But if you go look at Lawrence Gilman's likes, you'll notice that, like, a lot of them are Pep Guardiola / Man City content. Mm. Like, I think Dubas is a quiet citizen, not to get all soccerific on this again.
Yeah.
But it's like, what team's the most luxuriously deep? right? What team can lose three world-class midfielders and no one even notices, right?
Right.
I wonder if the blue and white were inspired by the sort of light blue team in Manchester that looks poised to win the EPL this year. Because that was like pure insurance policy buying from the Maple Leafs at the deadline, and it was a fascinating thing to see.
All right, Halford, you can say it. What happened to Man City over the weekend?
They lost to Leeds 2-1. That's also 10-man Leeds.
Right.
With a very dubious red, which I did not agree with.
You just threw it out there. That's good. I knew you wanted to say it at some point.
Stuart Dallas is okay. God.
That's enough.
92nd minute with 10 men. When everything in your instinct says sit back, protect the 1 point, protect the draw. No.
Can you put on the Canucks game?
I want to ask you something about this, though. Okay, I had a thought
about Leeds.
Yes, right. Your thoughts on Luke Ayling? No, I want to know. I want to know something here. When we got back to talking about like types of players and everything, I kind of had this little light bulb moment. We were talking about you can apply this to any sort of attribute or player, and I think it goes back to the crux of what we're talking about with not even just the Canucks, but there's a central line of thought with a lot of traditional hockey men. And so I'll use Beagle as an example.
Mm.
If they had taken the attributes that they wanted from Jay Beagle and said, we want these attributes, not necessarily the current holder of them, Jay Beagle, imagine how profoundly different that chase would have been. Because a big part of the reason that they had to give up what they had to give up was because, one, it wasn't the most attractive free agent landing place at the time. And two, there were other teams interested, right? So if you had kind of looked at that and even said, we want to bring in a guy that's got veteran experience, that's maybe won a Stanley Cup recently, that can win draws and play a fourth line role, I bet your cachet or folder of potential players would have opened up well beyond number 83. But because that they had a very linear way of thought about it, which was, well, the one guy we know that has all that stuff is number 83. All of a sudden, you go down a road where it's like, that's the only solution to the problem that we have.
Like Jay Beagle is Viagra, and the Canucks should have gotten a generic Viagra.
Blue Chew.
Yeah, like that sort of thing.
Or at least been open to their other options. Right?
Yes, right.
I think this is a fair overarching criticism, right? And a fair overarching criticism, too, for some of the moves that the Canucks have made over the past 2 weeks. You know, Tanner Pearson, for example, I think was a player that the Canucks were dead set on having back, right? They weren't willing to explore options to find a player like Tanner Pearson or a guy who can do 90% of what Tanner Pearson can do on the ice, but maybe is 20% less good as a human being off of it, right? they weren't willing to explore or countenance those options, and that creates an inflated contract outcome, in my opinion anyway. Certainly more than Tanner Pearson would likely have got had he hit the open market, in my view. And I think the same probably with Gaudette too, right? Like the club was in the past 4 or 5 days intent on trading Gaudette. And so you take the best offer you can get for Gaudette because you have to trade Adam Gaudette, right? Not as opposed to sort of thinking about how you best maximize the asset value of a guy that, you know, at several points, whether, you know, on his sort of Hobie Baker rise through his, you know, 40 point over 82 game season, scoring pace season, you know, could have been dealt for an awful lot more, right? So, yeah, I mean, I think when you arrive at any move with sort of a narrow focus on a specific player, you end up paying a premium retail price for that item, right? And look, the Leafs did it with Nick Foligno, right? Mm-hmm. The Leafs did it this week too.
Yeah.
So it's not unusual, but I think they looked over their options and decided Taylor Hall wasn't one. And they wanted a guy who was more in that like Pearson mold. Right? Like partly, I think the Foligno deal is influenced by the fact that Vancouver signed Pearson, right? That all of a sudden you sort of ran out of, you know, character left wing options. So the fact that Foligno got traded at 33 for a first and 2/4 on the one hand shows that good people do retain value, and perhaps that's an argument for re-signing Tanner Pearson. But I just sort of look at it overall with where this team's at in their development cycle and think that's an inefficient way to proceed. And I did enjoy, too, the Canucks sort of set the market, right, with, like, Iafallo and Lawton sort of coming in at a similar rate. Mm-hmm. And I still think that the market completely craters, by the time we get to July 28th for, you know, non-elite talent. So it'll be fascinating to watch. But, yeah, I mean, there's a complicated set of dynamics, but I do think you're right. When you go in laser-focused on a specific outcome, you do limit your options and often limit your value in sort of filling that.
It's Alfred and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. We're talking with Thomas Drantz of The Athletic. Drantzer, how intent were the Canucks on trading Adam Gaudette right now before the Canucks return to action as opposed to this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, the sense I get is they were pretty intent on doing so. And
oh, why is that?
Well, no, and I mean, I think, you know, the Jim alluded to Gaudette wanting more ice time, asking for a bigger role. But, you know, I think there's, I think it's impossible to divorce what occurs from, you know, the facts on the ground, which are simple, that, you know, Adam Gaudette was the index case for a COVID outbreak that infected the majority of his teammates and coaches and was then traded before the club ever gathered again, right? I mean, that's the facts on the ground, and anyone can say whatever they want, but that, you know, that's all you need to know, really. And then, you know, I think there's, yeah, I think for a variety of reasons, the club had decided that for, you know, fit reasons, culture reasons, their sort of view of things, he wasn't, you know, a future facing piece for them. And that's too bad. I believe in Adam Gaudette as a player. Like, I think he's got a really high work rate. I think there's a lot of reasons to believe that he can refine or retrieve some of the form that he had in 1920. And, you know, wish him well in Chicago. Enjoyed working with him when I got the chance. And, you know, it's an interesting dynamic for sure. But, yeah, I think the club decided that they wanted to deal him now as opposed to at the draft. And I do think that, you know, probably had an impact on what they were able to return in Matthew Highmore.
Drantzer, great stuff today, bud. Thanks a lot for doing this. We appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the week and all that it entails. We'll talk again next week.
My pleasure, gentlemen. Cheers.
Thanks. That's Thomas Drantz from The Athletic Vancouver here on the Halford and Bruff Show on TSN. Oops.
You did
Sportsnet
it.
Sportsnet 650.
Man. Yeah.
I almost did it.
You need to be just a little more mindful. That's all.
You said the three letters. There's no almost.
Yeah.
I didn't say the rest of it.
But you did it.
That's secondary. Nobody cares about that.
Yeah. All right. Okay. It doesn't matter, though.
I know it doesn't. I genuinely don't.
Just be okay.
I don't care.
Bad news in the NBA. Jamal Murray.
I saw this.
Has been diagnosed with a torn ACL. He's out indefinitely.
You know that happened with like 50 seconds left in the game last night, too?
Yeah.
And that was against the Warriors. Mm-hmm. That was the game in which Steph Curry became the all-time leading scorer in Warriors franchise history, passing Wilt Chamberlain. A pretty eventful night. That is brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal news.
You can pretty much take the Nuggets out of the...
Right, and that was with Nikola Jokic playing at a near MVP caliber level throughout the year, like a nightly double-double guy.
Now, and they traded for Aaron Gordon, too.
Pardon me?
And they traded for Aaron Gordon,
too. I watched one of Aaron Gordon's first games with the Nuggets. I'm like, that's a team that could legit compete because they were that much more dynamic. They're toast now.
Was anyone expecting Jamal Murray to play for Canada at the qualifying?
I think it was in the conversation, but looking less and less likely because of how compacted everything was going to be, especially if the Nuggets went on a deep playoff run.
Mm-hmm.
So to say that this is like a huge blow to Canada might be a tad disingenuous because I'm not sure he would have been there. It just sucks because he's the best Canadian basketball player right now.
We saw it in the bubble.
I don't know if you've been paying attention to Knicks, but RJ Barrett has been playing really well lately and like finally starting to make good on all that potential. Not that he was a bust or anything, but, you know. With Murray, you saw what he did in the bubble. The Nuggets were having a great year this year. The way he went down, you saw his knee buckle when he landed yesterday, and it was just immediate shooting pain.
Mm-hmm.
It was
an ugly-looking injury, too.
And he actually, they brought out the wheelchair, and he refused to go in it. Mm-hmm. He just hobbled off the court. But I think it's funny... Not funny, but it's funny that with a lot of NBA guys, they'll go on to social media right away and say, like, prayers up or good luck, bro. It's almost as if they know by looking at the injury, they know that it's bad.
Yeah.
Because all the guys said it right away. Mm-hmm. They're like, man, that's a bad one. you know, prayers up. I think his Twitter handle is BeMore27. Like, you know, prayers up and best of luck with recovery. So it's funny when you got other NBA guys, they just kind of know that it's going to be a bad one. Then, of course, it's confirmed this morning that Jamal Murray, star Canadian guard for the Denver Nuggets, diagnosed with a torn ACL. So that's going to put him out for an awfully long time. Huge bummer. Really, really crappy news.
Matthew Highmore, the newest Vancouver Canuck. What did you call him in the notes, Dom, when you sent it?
High Tower.
Yeah. Yes. He's not high. He was never in a Police Academy movie, to my knowledge, although we'll ask him on the other side.
He was not Arizona Cardinals running back Tim Hightower. Not him either.
Now, a lot of people making the obvious joke that a guy named Highmore is perfect for Vancouver.
Yes.
But hopefully he brings a little energy to the bottom six, and he's not Highmore.
Because weed.
Yeah, that's the joke. I miss Kletch.
Drugs.
He's probably smoking doobies.
Yeah. How many pots have you smoketh?
Anyway, I'm sure he's thrilled if he's listening to this.
I doubt he is.
I doubt he is, too. Yeah. Matthew Highmore coming up next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
And Leeds are coming, and there's a ball forward for Stuart Dallas, and Dallas is through, and Stuart Dallas has scored for Leeds! Stuart Dallas breaks through the middle and rolls the ball in, and Leeds United, the 10 men of Leeds United!
Absolutely incredible. Our boys never know when they're beat, and not only that, they want to come out and get the winner as well, and Stuart Dallas, just brilliant.
.829 on a Tuesday, Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Did Scotty just say you don't want to miss your daily dose of Mike McKenna?
Weekly, I believe.
I feel like there's got to be a better way to say that. Just throwing that out there.
Daily dose? Why? What's a...
Weekly dose.
Yeah, that's fine.
Matthew Highmore.
Speaking of doses.
All right.
Oh, right. Drugs. Dom's dying back there. The phone's ringing. Pick it up. I can see the light flashing. Matthew Highmore is going to join us in just a matter of seconds here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. One of the two new Canucks, Madison Bowie, not Bowie, as I said earlier, Bowie is the other one. They will be joining the team, presumably in the not too distant future. We're still trying to get a hold on a variety of things, including what quarantine looks like. It's obviously going to take a while. And we also still are optimistic that the Canucks will be back in action on Friday. But again, if we've learned anything over the last 3 weeks, it's to predict nothing and try and react to the situation at hand. But before we do any of that, we're very excited to have our next guest on the line. One of the two new members of the Vancouver Canucks, Matthew Highmore, joins us now on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Matthew. How are you?
Good, guys. How you guys doing?
We're good, thanks. And thanks for taking the time to do this. One, congrats on the move. Welcome to Vancouver. Two, walk us through yesterday. What was it like learning that you were being dealt and you are now a member of the Canucks?
Yeah, it was a crazy day. You know, there's lots of emotions that kind of go through it. But when I found out going to be going to the Canucks, I was super excited. You know, being a Canadian boy, always wanting to play for a Canadian team, it's super cool, and I'm really looking forward to it, and can't wait to get started.
Now, you're a fascinating case study here because you got traded in the midst of a pandemic where it's not just as simple as throw some stuff in a bag, get to the airport, and go to Vancouver. What do you know so far about what the next few days are going to have in store for you?
Yeah, a little bit different, I think, than normal, obviously. But I'm in quarantine right now and will be for the next little while. And, you know, we'll just kind of go from there. I believe it's a 7-day quarantine. I'm not 100% sure on that. But, you know, we'll quarantine and try to stay in shape as best as we can and be ready whenever that's over.
And you're already currently landed in Vancouver, so you're good to go?
I am. Yes, I landed last night.
Terrific. You know, tell us a little bit about your game. I can give a brief bio for the listeners that might not be all that familiar. 5 years with the St. John Sea Dogs in the QMJHL. You played with a bunch of different guys there. You actually got to a Mem Cup final where the eventual winner was the Windsor Spitfires and, of course, goalie Mike DiPietro, who's a member of the Canucks. From mm-hmm. there, you signed as an undrafted free agent with the Blackhawks organization. You got off to a really good start in Rockford. You had a terrific goal-scoring campaign. You got a lot of accolades in the American League. Take it from there. What's your career been like over the last few years moving up and down between Rockford and the Chicago Blackhawks?
Yeah, my second year pro, I was injured all year. I think I played a total of 9 games. So then last year was my third year, and played mostly up with Chicago, and you know, just kind of tried to find my way in the league, do the little things well, and kind of go from there. And I thought I did that, and then this year, you know, started in Chicago and tried to build on my game, and that was just kind of how the year went. But yeah, I mean, I try to play both ends of the ice and do that to the best of my ability.
It's Halford and Brough show on Sportsnet 650. We're talking to newest Canuck Matthew Highmore, traded yesterday from the Chicago Blackhawks. Have you had conversations with Jim Benning or the head coach Travis Green? And if you have, what have they told you?
Yeah, I got the opportunity to talk to Jim Benning for a quick moment yesterday and received some texts from a couple guys and Travis Green. So it was nice for them to reach out and to welcome me. Certainly felt nice. And no specifics as of now. I think just want to get through this quarantine and then kind of get back in shape. And I think that's probably where we'll go from there.
At the NHL level, when your game is on and you're playing well and you're feeling good and you're healthy, what do you do well? What is your specialty?
Yeah, I think for myself to help the team, you know, I want to bring energy. I want to be in on the forecheck, create turnovers, you know, basically create havoc, get to the front of the net. That's kind of where I want to be. And defensively be as sound as possible, you know, get the pucks out, make a good first pass because have to from the wing and get pucks in. I think that, you know, you want to be able to change momentum in the game. That's kind of what I want to do when I'm at my best.
Matthew, you're from Nova Scotia. Were you a big Brad Marchand fan growing up? And if you were, I wouldn't recommend saying that.
growing up, he played for the Mooseheads, the junior team in Halifax. So, you know, it was one of those things that you kind of grew up watching him and watching him progress. But, you know, knowing him now, he's a good guy.
Well, strike one.
You know, I want to circle back to your junior career as well, because you got a very similar path to a guy currently with the Vancouver Canucks in Zach McEwen, who also spent a considerable amount of time playing in the Q. He's a Maritimer as well. He went undrafted and then worked his way up and is now in the mix with the Canucks. And, I've talked to Zach on a number of occasions. And it's interesting because I think the understanding for most people that cover the NHL from the outside looking in is that anyone that doesn't get drafted has a chip on their shoulder. But I remember Zach saying, like, he never really looked at it that way specifically because he was just focused on working hard and playing as many games as he could and getting better. And I was reading a couple interviews that you did, and you kind of had similar answers where it's like, I'm not going to wear this didn't get drafted thing as some sort of scarlet letter or put it as a chip on my shoulder. I'm just going to keep working and getting better and getting better. I thought it was a really interesting one because, again, the narrative is always like, oh, it has to go this way. But you and Zach have kind of proven it doesn't necessarily have to go that way.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, in meeting Zach a few times over the last couple of years, you know, our paths are definitely very similar. And we took the same approach. You know, there isn't really a point in having a chip on your shoulder. It's kind of, it may, you know, take more energy from what you're trying to do and what you're trying to accomplish. So just kind of putting your head down and grinding through everything making sure you're doing the right things day in and day out. And that's kind of always been, you know, kind of my motto, and I'm sure it's his as well.
Well, Matthew, we want to wish you the best of luck with everything moving forward. I know it's not an ideal situation having to go into quarantine, but best of luck getting through it. Best of luck with whatever comes from this crazy season as you're now a member of the Vancouver Canucks. Thanks for doing this today. We really appreciate it. Be well, be safe. And again, best of luck moving forward.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Really excited to get going.
Thank you. That's Matthew Highmore, one of the newest members of the Vancouver Canucks here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Yeah, the one that jumped out when I was doing the research for this was there are some real similarities to Zach MacEwen. Their careers actually overlapped in the queue. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure they went up against each other a number of times, given that MacEwen's from PEI and Matthew is from Nova Scotia. But there are a lot of guys like this. And it's funny, we in the media, and I think sometimes we do this because it's the easy thing to do. And it's because it's a narrative that's already been out there and has been constructed, is that
he must use this to fuel himself.
Right. Yeah. Did you have a list of all the teams that didn't draft you? And then moving forward, where a lot of guys, quite frankly, don't expect to get drafted. Mm-hmm. They don't. And I think what's happened in the last few years is a lot of guys have realized that the traditional path to the NHL, where you go play junior, your draft year comes up, you get selected, you go back to junior, you play another year, and then you go to the NHL. There's a lot of different avenues. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the big ones is the collegiate route, where guys come out of there and they're 23 and they're 24 years old. Maybe their NHL window is shorter because they're coming in as more mature prospects, as we like to call them. But the other one is that with finances being as tight as they are, every single team is looking for a diamond in the rough and cheap labor, because the entry-level contracts have never become more valuable at the professional level. If you can get a guy that can produce on his ELC, you've hit a home run. Mm-hmm. And if you get a guy like MacEwen that can give you something where you didn't have to draft him, and it's all about player development at that point, that's a win for your organization. And those are the fine lines, the fine margins that separate good teams from bad teams now. It really is.
Yeah.
So
of course it is.
Right. And I mean, Chicago found one in Highmore, right? They were able to squeeze, what, almost 80 NHL games out of the guy, including a decent run in the playoffs last year.
And then turned that into, I'm not going to say it's a high percentage swing with Adam Gaudette, but I think Adam Gaudette's got a reasonable chance to be a player for the Chicago Blackhawks. Yeah.
And that's the way this works, is you find guys in any way, shape, or form that you can and hope that they can give you something, and then they become assets. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll take a quick break here, and we'll come back and leave a lot of time at the end. We should do some more humanoid what we learns. We didn't get into a ton of them, as we are wont to do here, because we're just so full of insight and humor. So we'll do that to finish off the show. Get your what we learns in. What did you learn over the last 24 hours in sports? Get us at Sportsnet at 650-650. That's the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can also get us on Twitter at Sportsnet 650. It's Halford. It's Brough. It's the home of the Canucks. Sportsnet 650.
And Jim calls me and he's like, okay, we have your seven teams. We're going to get to work here. I said, Jim, it's not your fault, but it's two teams now.
8:45 on a Tuesday. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Hit that beat. There it is. That was Ryan Kessler yesterday on The Family Show. We are family. Riccio and Randeep and me. The me being sat. Interesting insight into how things transpired a few years ago when Kessler asked his way out of Vancouver. Now, I think everyone understood, or at least knew, and if you didn't, congratulations, you're now in the know, that Kessler had presented Jim Benning, the newly minted Canucks general manager at the time, with two teams in which he would go, Anaheim or Chicago. That was down, apparently, from an original list of seven. So, if you've ever heard me talk about this before, I've kind of exercised all my opinions on this, right? I think Kessler... At this stage of the game, Kessler knew that if he was going to make amends in Vancouver, it was going to have to be pretty sincere and pretty repetitive. Like, I don't think that one sort of cursory apology or explanation was going to do it. So I think he's run the gamut now, mm-hmm. right? I mean, there was the entire thing about coming back to Vancouver. And then, you know, obviously it was really icy at the beginning. And I think he finally really understood what asking out meant in that manner, right?
I don't begrudge Kessler for trying to control the process there. It's what he negotiated in his contract.
Right. I just think that you have to be.
He wanted to go to a winner. Wanted to win.
I don't think at the time he was aware of the how severe the backlash was going to be. I think he thought that some people were going to see it the way you're seeing it now, mm-hmm. which is like, I don't begrudge him because.
I think some people saw it at that time.
I think a lot didn't.
Right.
I think a
lot. Well, how did they see it? Him bailing on the team, essentially?
Yes. And you know, the biggest issue with it, I don't want to call it the flying.
Here's the thing, though. He's still – I think it underscores how hard it is to win the Stanley Cup. And sometimes if you're a player, if you want to win a Stanley Cup, you got to take the bull by the horns because you run out of chances.
I'm just going to – there was a sense of when the going got tough, Kessler got going.
Yeah, and it was juxtaposed by Kevin Bieksa saying – if I'm going down with the ship. If the ship is going down, I'm going down. And eventually it took the Canucks to be like, hey, we kind of want to trade.
And you know who else it was juxtaposed by? Daniel and Henrik Sedin, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Because you want to put two polar opposite situations up on a mantle and say, this is how one situation went and this is how mm-hmm. the other one went. One went up and one went down. Those are the two, right?
And also Kessler, just his personality, he could be kind of miserable.
Yep.
That's all.
We've got a what we learned here from Rager. I mentioned this earlier, but I wanted to circle back on it. What we learned, Steph Curry passed Wilt the Stilt as the Warriors' all-time leading point scorer. And not just how good Steph Curry is, but how insanely dominant Wilt Chamberlain was. Yeah, so everyone was like, oh, this is fantastic. You know, Curry finally passed Wilt Chamberlain to become what I think everyone understood already was the greatest player in franchise history. I think everyone already sort of understood that, but that really cements it. Wilt Chamberlain did it in like 5 years. Mm-hmm. The numbers are just astronomical, right? You can't even really put them into any sort of modern context. Because nobody so thoroughly dominated. And I'm not just talking about points. There would be nights where Chamberlain would walk off with 45 points, 36 rebounds, and 15 blocks. And it would just be another night at the office. Like, that was it. I will say this about Steph. This year has been really unfortunate. Because there's a lot of Warriors fans who he's played at an absolutely berserk level. Mm-hmm. Like, if this team wasn't so piss poor, he'd be in the MVP running. And there's a lot of Warriors fans I know that are saying, wait a minute, did we just punt on an all-time season because we didn't properly address, and how do you properly address the Klay Thompson injury, but didn't make more of an effort to surround Steph with better players instead of guys like Nico Mannion?
Can I argue that fact, right?
Yeah, you can argue it.
Sorry. Does Steph Curry have as good of a season if he's got his running mate and Klay Thompson next to him? I would argue
that's
no.
That's a good point.
I would argue, yeah, because the spacing has never been worse for Steph Curry.
I understand that, but how many shots is he taking? Exactly. He's taking all the shots that Klay would have.
Right.
So he's going to have a better season because they don't have an option. He has to do it.
But think about the quality of looks and the quality of play they would have if the two were out there together.
But he's not taking as many shots as when they're out there together.
Right. I understand that his three-point shooting percentage isn't going to be nearly as high. But if you're talking about an MVP caliber effort, he's put it there this year.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not arguing that.
Right. So, would the numbers be different if Klay was there? Yeah, sure. I'll give you that. But I don't think the caliber of play
is the Warriors dynasty? Can we just look past that now?
I don't know.
Do you remember we had this conversation?
I know. I don't know because this. I did
After
not expect.
After KD left, I was like, "That's it."
Put it this way: what this dynamic that's happened this year in Golden State? I did not expect this to happen. I expected everyone to maybe coast through another year, but Steph's come out and there's a fire and a determination there that still burns pretty strong with the guy. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, that's going to be some really heavy lifting from their front office to try and make that work.
But the question was, did they punt on an all-time year from Steph Curry? My answer is no, because the year he's having is inflated by the fact that he doesn't have the guy next
right.
to him.
But
to,
you understand, why there would be a frustration level from the fans when they watch.
Absolutely.
Not necessarily just how he's playing, but the vigor in which he's going after it is they're saying, like, are we wasting this? Like, this guy is, like, give a crap meter is off the charts in a year where it really doesn't need to be. Mm-hmm. And this is the NBA we're talking about, where the give a crap meter can be pretty low at times for a lot of guys. It's been an interesting year to watch. They have some really bad players on that team.
Yeah.
Right?
Wiseman just got hurt too.
I know Wiseman's hurt now. I make fun of Nico Mannion. It's not his fault, but there's been some highlights this year where it's like, man, like he shouldn't be playing any sort of regular minutes in the NBA right now. He's just way over his head.
Who's a team that you guys are really looking forward to seeing in the playoffs? And you can't be like, the Lakers are good. Is it the Nets?
Like to see if the Utah Jazz are legitimate in the playoffs.
Right. It's tough with the Jazz.
I'm curious about the Suns.
The Jazz.
Them too, yeah.
Oh, by the way, I meant to bring this up. While I was out sick, the Suns played on back-to-back nights. Mm-hmm. So I watched both games. If you like Jimmy Butler because of the power drive,
yeah,
you would love watching Devin Booker play. Devin right. Booker is the fastest man alive, I think.
Is he powerful, though?
He attacks the rim with a relentlessness, but also a speed. Mm-hmm. There's a speed involved where you're like, oh, he's almost going to run out of the arena.
Does he hit his free throws when he
good
gets
shooter,
fouled?
Very good shooter, yeah. You should watch more Devin Booker because he attacks the rim so quickly. But you know those guys that go really fast and then they're like, they're going to bang the ball off the backboard really hard because it's just all their momentum is going. He's got the body control to like very featherly lay down. He's a lot of fun to watch. And he can shoot. They're not a 3-point shooting team by strength. That's not their thing. They're actually the number one in the NBA in 2-point shooting percentage. But we'll check them out. Anyway, this devolved into a very, very intricate basketball talk there at the end, as it's wont to do here on the Halford and Bruff Show. Scotty and Karen are coming up next. Thank you all today for everything. Thank you to Matthew Highmore as well. We got to get out of here. We'll be back tomorrow. Signing off, I have been Mike Halford. He has been Jason Bruff. This has been Halford and Bruff on Sportsnet 650.